It's a Friday, it's 10 to 5, and that means the latest instalment in the tragi-comedy box set that is the United States of America. Whatever you're doing, stop. Take a minute. You're about to hear a magician at work. Ladies and gentlemen, with his American Week, LBC's US correspondent, Simon Marks.
Well, Tom, every week at this time, I am tempted to say we've never seen anything like the 7 days wrapping up here tonight. But this week, really, we've never seen anything like it. There has been more evidence all week long of just how far America has drifted from its traditional democratic moorings and just how erratic the behaviour of its president has become. We'll get to him in a moment. But first, the very dangerous low point. And this really felt like a siren portending disaster ahead. It came yesterday. Today in the state of Michigan.
Last night, the FBI and Michigan State Police arrested six individuals charged in a federal complaint with conspiring to kidnap the governor of Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer.
That's Andrew Burge, the U.S. attorney for Western Michigan, announcing that the FBI had unraveled a plot to kidnap and possibly kill Michigan's governor. Gretchen Whitmer is a very prominent Democrat. Joe Biden considered her as a possible running mate before choosing Kamala Harris. According to criminal indictments now laid against 13 men arrested yesterday, the members of two separate far-right militia groups were recruiting an army 200 strong to seize the governor from her holiday home, hold her captive in a remote forest, and then conduct a show trial accusing her of treason. Why? Because earlier this year she ordered a lockdown of her state to try and slow the spread of COVID-19.
I knew this job would be hard, but I'll be honest. I never could have imagined anything like this.
Governor Whitmer yesterday speaking to reporters after the arrests were made and after we learned that members of the militia had allegedly acquired a taser and were on Wednesday about to buy explosives. The governor put the blame for their decision to mobilize firmly at the White House door.
When our leaders meet with, encourage, or fraternize with domestic terrorists, they legitimize their actions. And they are complicit.
She cited President Trump's instruction to far-right vigilantes voiced during that disastrous first TV debate last week to stand down and stand by as a presidential dog whistle to militias all over the country. And while she opened her remarks with these words,
I want to start by saying thank you to our law enforcement.
That was not good enough for him.
And, you know, I see Whitmer today. She's complaining, but it was our Justice Department that arrested the people that she was complaining about. It was my Justice Department that arrested them.
That claim on Fox News last night that the Justice Department, my Justice Department, which traditionally has jealously guarded its independence, is now his own personal possession, is a stunning window into his authoritarian thinking. L'état c'est moi, said Louis XIV of France. The state is me. Of course, the Sun King ruled the French for 72 years, whereas Donald Trump has indicated over the last fortnight that he only fancies another 16. There was more of this dangerous nonsense on Fox. Yesterday, the president issuing a televised instruction to his Attorney General Bill Barr to lay treason charges against Joe Biden and Barack Obama. The president again falsely accusing them of plotting an attempted coup.
These people should be indicted. This was the greatest political crime in the history of our country, and that includes Obama and it includes Biden. These are people that spied in my campaign, and we have everything. Now they say they have much more, okay? And I say, Bill, we got plenty. You don't need any more.
From Bill, we've heard nothing this week. The president's attorney general, after initially resisting the idea, went into COVID-19 isolation, one of scores of Trump officials all temporarily removed from the battlefield after the White House became America's new infection epicenter. The casualties included Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany and two of her top aides, the president's top advisor Stephen Miller, his senior counselor Hope Hicks, at least five of the people who helped the president prepare for the first presidential debate, including the former governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie. He's now been hospitalized for nearly a week in undisclosed condition, and it's still very unclear whether the president's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, is still up and at him. That is, of course, before we get to the backroom staff at the White House, the butlers, the waiters, the interns. Even the head of the White House Security Office was reported this week to be gravely ill with COVID-19. Little wonder that Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, says he won't go near the place.
I haven't been to the White House since August the 6th, and I personally didn't feel that they were approaching the protection from this illness in the same way that I thought was appropriate for the Senate.
Now, what on earth would have given him that idea?
I just left Walter Reed Medical Center. And it's really something very special.
The president, minutes after arriving back at the White House after 3 days in hospital and seconds after his first act upon his return, was publicly to remove his face mask and pose, glowering like a heavyweight champion on the White House balcony for images to be used in campaign videos.
I went, I didn't feel so good. And 2 days ago, I could have left 2 days ago. 2 days ago, I felt great. Don't let it dominate. Don't let it take over your lives. Nobody that's a leader would not do what I did. And now I'm better, and maybe I'm immune. I don't know.
Well, we don't know either, because if we learnt one thing this week, it's that we can't, unfortunately, trust the word of the president's physician, who last weekend was a font of misinformation. There is one question the doctor and White House officials are strenuously refusing to answer. When exactly did the president last test negative for COVID-19? It's a critical piece of information, which may be why the White House isn't providing it. Given the rapidity of the president's Lazarus-like recovery, perhaps he was infected earlier than the White House has disclosed and spent several days inside the compound and in two other American states acting as a super spreader.
We have medicines right now, and I call them a cure.
Since returning from hospital, the president has released a series of videos in which he has falsely claimed there is a cure for COVID-19. He sounded like a TV pitchman for one in particular, Regeneron's cocktail of antibodies, which just happened to be produced by a company headed by a member of one of his golf clubs.
But I want you to get the same care that I got. I got incredible care at Walter Reed, incredible doctors. And this medicine in particular, one medicine was unbelievable. You're going to get the same medicine. You're going to get it free, no charge. And we're going to get it to you soon.
No charge? Sounds suspiciously like the NHS. Socialized medicine of the kind President Trump claims Joe Biden wants to bring to the US. But never mind ideological consistency. This has been the week the president's behavior has been more erratic than ever before. 14 points behind Joe Biden in the polls. He needs to persuade working men and women to get behind him. But he surprised everyone by pulling out of stimulus talks with the Democrats that are designed to get urgently needed cash into the bank accounts of the very voters he needs to reach. And then yesterday, in a fit of pique, he said he won't debate Joe Biden next week after the debate commission decided to move the encounter to a virtual format.
No, I'm not going to waste my time on a virtual debate. That's not what debating's all about. You sit behind a computer and do a debate. It's ridiculous. And then they cut you off whenever they want.
Now, that's just bizarre. 4 million people have already voted. The debates are the president's best and last opportunity to reach the public and make his case. But he may now have torpedoed any chance of another debate in this election cycle.
She has
15 seconds because
well, I gotta have
trying
more
to keep,
than that. Look,
well, I'm sorry, Vice President, look, but you've had more time than she's had so far.
This week's vice presidential debate between Mike Pence and Kamala Harris wasn't much of an advertisement for the genre. And we got a glimpse of just how much the Democrats are getting away with in this whiplash campaign. Mike Pence wanted to know if Joe Biden and Kamala Harris intend to enlarge the Supreme Court to dilute the influence of conservative-leaning justices sitting on it.
Are you and Joe Biden, if somehow you win this election, going to pack the Supreme Court to get your way?
I'm so glad we went through a little history lesson. Let's do that a little more. In 1864...
Well, I'd like you to answer the question.
Mr. Yes. Vice President, I'm speaking. Okay. In 1864...
Any answer beginning in 1864 is designed to avoid answering a very direct question in 2020. The president today is once again ignoring doctor's orders. He's guest hosting America's leading conservative radio program, and tonight he'll give his first live TV interview since he came out of hospital. During the course of that Fox News production, he will undergo a live on-camera medical evaluation by the network's medical correspondent. While this parody presidency continues, the last word this week goes to a widow, Amanda Klutz. Her husband died of COVID-19 in July. Listen to her reaction to the president's admonition to Americans not to let the virus dominate their lives.
No one's letting it. Nick didn't let it. It wasn't a choice.
And it dominated his life. It dominated my life. It dominated our family's lives. It's beyond hurtful. Have some empathy. Why are you bragging? You are our leader. Have some empathy to the people who are suffering and grieving.
The great American journalist William Safire once said that leadership happens when the inconceivable becomes the inevitable. What we learnt this week, Tom, is that sometimes the inconceivable is just the inconceivable, even when you read about it on the front pages.
Live from Washington, D.C., LBC's US correspondent Simon Marks.